I'd like to turn to the book of 2 Kings, chapter 6. Did have a very good conference yesterday up in Traverse City. We enjoyed being there. Today we'd like to read 2 Kings, chapter 6, verses 8 through verse 17. Then the king of Syria warred against Israel, took counsel with his servants, saying, "In such a place shall be my camp." And the man of God sent unto the king of Israel, saying, "Beware that thou pass not such a place, for thither the Syrians are come down." And the king of Israel sent to the place which the man of God told him and warned him of, and saved himself there not once nor twice. Therefore the heart of the king of Syria was sore troubled for this thing. And he called his servants and said unto them, "Will ye not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?" And one of his servants said, "None, my lord, O king, but Elisha the prophet that is in Israel telleth the king of Israel the words that thou speakest in thy bedchamber." And he said, "Go and spy where he is, that I may send and fetch him." And was told him, saying, "Behold, he's in Dothan." Therefore sent he thither horses and chariots and a great host. And they came by night and compassed the city about. And when the servant of the man of God was risen early and gone forth, behold, a host compassed the city with horses and chariots. And his servant said unto him, "Alas, my master, how shall we do?" And he answered, "Fear not, for they that be with us are more than they that be with them." And Elisha prayed and said, "Lord, I pray thee, open his eyes that he may see." And the Lord opened the eyes of the young man, and he saw, and behold, the mountain was full of horses and chariots of fire round about Elisha. You read on in verse 18, you see the troops came down, and Elisha prayed that the Lord would smite them with blindness, and he did. Setting the stage, verse 8, our text opens with the king of Syria. Syria, with its horses and chariots and a host of warriors, held the reputation of a mighty and almost invincible army, military force. Because of their military superiority, they were very accustomed to invading and conquering. In fact, wherever they invaded, they expected to conquer. We read here that the king of Syria warred against Israel. And in doing so, he positioned his soldiers in strategic and unexpected places, with a desire to catch Israel off guard and defeat them. But every time the king of Syria placed his troops in a particular spot where he thought he could catch Israel off guard, Elisha, the man of God, would tell the king of Israel where the Syrians were. And we see from verse 9 that Israel would escape these places. The king of Syria, of course, became very disturbed, very frustrated, and he came to the conclusion that there was a spy in his camp. So he called together his military there in verse 11, and he said, "Will ye not show me which of us is for the king of Israel?" In other words, there's a spy in the camp, and we're going to find out who it is. One of the king's men stepped forward in verse 12 and said, "We're all loyal to thee, king. But the problem is that prophet, Elisha, he's telling the king of Israel what you think. He's telling the king of Israel what you say. He's telling the king of Israel what you're planning." The king of Syria, no doubt, became enraged and decided that he would, of course, eliminate the problem which involved eliminating Elisha. So he gave instruction in verse 13 to find out the whereabouts of Elisha so that he could capture him. And the king was informed, behold, he's in Dothan. The king of Israel, or the king of Syria, determined that Elisha was not going to escape. In verse 14, sent horses and chariots and a great host. And they came by night and compassed the city about. The king of Syria was absolutely determined that Elisha would not escape, that he would capture and that he would kill Elisha. The servant of Elisha rises early in the morning, we're told, and he does so to go about his duties, and more about that later. And he looks up and he sees the mighty Syrian army with their horses and chariots, and they've got the city surrounded, and he cries out to Elisha in absolute hysteria, "What shall we do? Alas, master, what shall we do?" Elisha informs him of the wonderful presence and power of God and pleads with the Lord that the Lord would open the eyes of his servant, causing him to see what Elisha could see. Now, there are a lot of wonderful and valuable lessons in this passage of Scripture. We're certainly not going to look at them all, but they would be good for you and I to give heed to what is here. I want to speak this morning on a time of spiritual warfare. A time of spiritual warfare. I want to consider, first of all, we are in a spiritual warfare. Most are unaware of it. You say, well, how do you know that? It's obvious. But I pray that we would go from here with the realization that we are in a spiritual warfare. There is always an enemy to a nation. Whatever nation you're talking about, every nation has an enemy or enemies. Most of us that are old enough have a position. We hold an opinion. When it comes to the United States military, we have a position and we hold opinion on foreign policy, on other nations, on international affairs. We have a position, we hold an opinion on terrorism, on Syria, on Afghanistan, Iraq, Iran, Egypt, on and on we could go. And these are important and significant issues. But there is a far, far more important and significant warfare going on in the spiritual realm. We read in Ephesians 6 and verse 12, "For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places." This is a war. This is a war that goes beyond what can be seen with the physical eye. It is a war that is fought in enemy territory. It is a never-ending war in this life. This war that we're talking about never ends in this life, upon this earth. It is a war that involves a personal and close encounter with an enemy. We wrestle. That's not a battle fought at a distance. That's a close encounter. We wrestle. So it is a personal and close encounter with an enemy. We wrestle not with flesh and blood. It is an enemy greater than flesh and blood. It is an enemy beyond mortal man. This is a war far more fierce, with far more casualties than all the wars of mankind combined. This is a war that has resulted in more devastation and ruin than all wars combined. It is a war that has far greater consequence than all wars combined. In our text, the enemy forces were led by the king of Syria. But the enemy forces of the war we are talking about is led by Satan. Throughout the history of the world, never has there been a more hostile, more evil, a more wicked enemy than Satan. Never has there been a more furious and fierce enemy than Satan. Never has there been a more bloodthirsty, more hateful, more cruel. And the world has known a lot of bloodthirsty, hateful, and cruel dictators. None of them even touch Satan. Don't even come close. Never has there been a more merciless enemy. Never has there been a more conniving and deceitful enemy. Everything he does is with the intent and purpose to destroy. And everything he does is based upon lies and deceptions. Never has there been a more provoking enemy. Never has there been a more opportunistic enemy. Never has there been an enemy who has felt more of an urgency than Satan. Never has there been a more resolute enemy. And never has there been an enemy, a more strategic enemy than Satan. Again, in our text, the king of Syria had evil intentions toward Israel. But we are at war with Satan, the arch enemy of God. And he strives to oppose and stop the work of God. He endeavors, and he already has, but he endeavors to capture the minds and hearts of each and every individual here today. There are no exemptions. He has a desire to capture your heart and mind. May I say that's worse than if he killed you. That's worse than losing your life. To have your heart and mind captured by Satan. He is an enemy that wants absolute dominion and sway. He is an enemy that seeks to get advantage over every single individual here. He is an enemy that seeks to draw every one of us into sin and to distract the people of God, turning them aside from that which is right and holy and pleasing to God. Turning them aside from any serious reading and hearing of the Word of God. Turning them aside from authentic prayer and worship. This is an enemy that endeavors to destroy you. This is an enemy that endeavors to destroy every member of your family. There are no exceptions. This is an enemy that seeks to ransack and loot your life. that seeks to ransack and loot your marriage, your home, your church. And he has methods to do so. He has wiles to do so. He has traps to accomplish his mission. He's on a mission. It is a mission of absolute destruction. This is an enemy that is never, not for one second, interested in your good. He is not interested, not for one single second, in the good of your children or your grandchildren. This is a war. Now, people that live in war zones, I imagine, are always aware that they live in a war zone. I doubt if there's anyone in Syria, I'm not talking about Syria in 2 Kings 6, I'm talking about Syria today. I doubt if there's anyone in Syria that is unaware that there's a war going on. And if you live in a war zone and you're unaware, you're going to get killed. You're going to be a casualty. And here we are in the greatest warfare ever. And many of God's people are unaware. And many of them already are a casualty. And some will become. The people that live in war zones are aware that they do so. And they live every aspect of their life in the awareness we're in a war. I imagine that if you lived in Syria today and you had to go to the store, you'd give it a lot of thought. You wouldn't just get up and walk to the store. You'd have to give it some thought. I would imagine that every decision you made would be affected. We're in a war. Why do I say today that people are unaware of a spiritual warfare? Because they make decisions that put them right in the midst of destruction. They're unaware that we live in a war. A war far greater than what's going on in Syria today. The people in Syria, I'm sure they're very, 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 I can't put enough varies upon it, careful who they talk to. You'd think long and hard, but you would just wouldn't walk up to a stranger and start talking. It might be the enemy. It concerns everything. The fact that they're in a war affects their entire life. So everything they do, I'm sure, is in the consideration of the fact there's a war going on. Here we are, in the most dangerous of all war zones, in the greatest of all wars. And it is important that we as God's people live in the constant realization that we're in the midst of a spiritual warfare. In this war, Satan and the forces of hell are after your attention, the attention of your children and grandchildren. Satan and the forces of hell are after your mind and your thoughts. And God's people need to realize, if you're raising children, you raise your children in the midst of a war zone. You better realize that. Those who have grandchildren, you need to realize your grandchildren live just as you do in the midst of a war zone. Our marriages are carried on in the midst of an ongoing spiritual warfare. People who live in war zones, I imagine, are very alert and cautious. I can't imagine living in Syria and not being alert and cautious. You realize that there's a war going on all around you. You're going to be alert and you're going to be cautious. Why are God's people so careless? Because they don't even know the war they're in. They have no clue. There's nothing more dangerous than to live in a war zone and be clueless that there's bombs going off all around you. People live in war zones, if they're not alert and cautious, for sure are going to become a casualty of that war. And today, we must always be aware everywhere we go that we're in a war zone. I believe people in Syria that go to work, they go there knowing I'm in a war. They go to school, they do so realizing there's a war going on. If they go to the store, they realize there's a war going on. If they go to a restaurant, they realize there's a war going on. My point is, if we go to work, if we go to school, if we go to the store, if we go to the restaurant, if we go to places of amusement and entertainment, if we go out for recreation, if we get together for family gatherings, or even if we're sitting at home, there's a war going on. And you'd better realize it, or you're going to be a casualty. We are in the midst of the greatest and most fierce warfare ever waged. People who live in war zones, almost everywhere they go, I imagine, are likely to see and experience the tragedies of war. Everywhere you go, you're going to see the wounded, the dead. You're going to see buildings that are demolished. And today, you and I cannot go anywhere without seeing the casualties of the spiritual war that we're in. They're everywhere around us. And if you lived in Syria today, everywhere you go, and even if you're sitting at home, you are exposed to danger. We are in the greatest war ever waged. And everywhere we go, I don't care where it is, we are exposed to danger. I don't believe there is anywhere I can go where I do not subject myself to sin. You can hardly go anywhere without hearing something that you do not want to hear or you do not need to hear. And you cannot go anywhere hardly today without seeing something you don't want to see and you don't need to see. We are in a war. And I imagine that people who live in war zones are very protective of their children. I don't think there's too many parents in Syria. Ahmad, go out and play today. I don't think so. I don't think so. They're very, very protective of their children. Very protective of their grandchildren and their loved ones. They watch out for them. And here we are in the midst of the greatest war ever waged, the most horrific of all wars, the most devastating, the most fierce, the most crippling of wars, a war against the most hateful and ruthless enemy, the most resolute and powerful enemy the world has ever known. And even God's people Well, we don't want to be too protective. May I say something? That is a special kind of stupid. Either that or you don't care one bit. How can you be too protective when you live in a war zone? Do you think there's anyone in Syria that's keeping their children at home saying, well, we're going to just let them go out and play today. We don't want to be too protective. We don't want to shield them. I don't believe there's anyone there that's stupid. But here we are. And that's what we do. How many people in Syria would send little Ahmad out and Ahmad go play with that bomb for a while? Yet today, people allow their children to play with bombs. I can't even do it. Playing games all day long. I don't know what's wrong with his mind. Wake up. His brains have been blown out. That's what happens when you play with a bomb. Well, we don't want to be too protective. We don't want them to be any different than the other children. Again, that's a special kind of stupid. How ignorant? How ignorant can you be? Or there's parents today, I don't approve of premarital sex, but they're, you know, kids are going to be kids and they're going to do it anyway, so I went ahead and bought them condoms. That's stupid. It's evil also. I don't approve of my daughter wearing the attire of a harlot, but she's going to anyway, so I gave her $100 to go buy what she wants. Are you a fool? Are you an idiot? We live in a war zone. We need to start acting like it. Like we believe there's a war going on. You don't send them out where you know the bombs are going to fall. You don't do that. Yet people in a spiritual warfare do. They do it all the time. Then there's the parent who's absolutely clueless about what their child's being taught in school. I don't bother myself with that. Again, that's a special kind of stupid. We're in the midst of a warfare. I pray that we realize that fact. We want to notice some individuals in our text. There's one that we don't want to be like, and there's two others. First of all, there's the unaware servant. We read in verse 15, he was the servant of the man of God. This man was the servant of the most powerful prophet of the day, Elisha. This man was fervent. He was zealous. It says in verse 15 that he was risen early. Why? Why did he get up early? Well, it says he was risen early and gone forth. That tells me that he rose early to do his duties. He rose early to do what he was supposed to do. He is a faithful servant. And we thank the Lord for faithful servants. And we ought to strive to be such. But we're in a spiritual warfare. And such requires more than outward service. That's what this servant was doing early in the morning. What we read of this servant reveals that just because you get up early and you do what you're supposed to do every day does not mean that you live in the awareness of God. This servant was unaware of God. And there are a lot of people. They do what they're supposed to do, but they're unaware of God. They're unaware of the Lord. And though this servant was actively serving the most powerful prophet alive, he was blind to God. He was blind to God. This servant, as he's going forth to do his duties, what he's supposed to do, he looks over here and there are the Syrians with their horses and chariots. Looks over here and there's some more. Looks over here and there's some more. Looks over here, there's some more. Everywhere he looks, there's this powerful Syrian army with their horses and chariots. What is sad is that's all he could see. Many of God's people just like that. In fact, many of God's people are even worse off than that. They don't even see the enemy. They don't see God. They don't see the enemy. They're so oblivious, they just live in wonderland. He's absolutely blind to the presence and working of God. No matter what direction he looked, there was trouble, there was difficulty, there was impossibility. All he could see, and he could see them very, very clearly, was the enemy ready to attack. But this servant was blind to the presence and working of God. And as a result, his heart sank in despair and he became stricken with panic, causing him to draw a senseless conclusion. Alas, my master, what shall we do? In other words, alas, master, we're doomed. We're doomed! Might as well surrender. This servant has given up. It's descriptive, again, of the condition of many of God's people. Due to spiritual blindness, they live very unsettled lives. They live lives filled with anxiety and fear. We're in a spiritual warfare, and we cannot afford to be blind to the presence and to the working of God. The second person we want to see is the King of Israel. We read of him in verses 9 and verse 10. Elisha, the man of God, would send message to him that the Syrians were in such and such a place. And the king of Israel gave heed to the message. And the result was his life was spared, not just once, not just twice, but many times. The king had a source of information, and he took it to heart. He took advantage of it. Here we are in the greatest warfare ever waged against the most furious, fierce, hateful, bloodthirsty, and merciless enemy of all. And many of God's people fail to avail themselves of information that will save their life. You have in your possession a book that contains vital information. Vital information concerning the war that you are in every single day of your life. And if you and I are aware that we are in a warfare, you will want to take this book every single day and get all the information you can. Reading the scriptures in the morning, reading the scriptures in the afternoon, reading the scriptures in the evening, it may not only save your life, it may give you enough sense to save your child's life. Vital information. And here we are in the greatest warfare of all time. And God's people have this information that'll save your life. And instead, you read the enemy's manuals and laugh. There's nothing funny about a warfare. Neglecting vital information. What would have happened to the king of Israel had he neglected the information that he had? He would have been killed. And so would have his men. And you invite destruction into your home. It's like handing the devil your house key and say, come on in. When you ignore and when you neglect the vital information that we have. That's why I say people are unaware that we live in a war zone. Either that or just plain stupid. Or they just don't care. I choose to believe that they're just ignorant enough not to believe that they're in a war zone. That they're in a war zone. Every Sunday morning, every Sunday evening, every Wednesday evening, here at Home Baptist Church, there is a free session of dispensing vital information that might save your life. And God's people many times say, well, I know that meeting's free, but I've already bought tickets to such and such, and they cost me $100. I'm going to go over there. I'm going to pay to go and sit in the enemy's territory instead of going for free and getting vital information that can save my life. Now tell me that's smart. There's nothing smart about it. We must wake up. We're in a warfare. Well, I know that church is going on and there's vital information, but I just need to relax a little. And the bombs are going off all around you. We're in a war. What would have happened if the king of Israel did not avail himself of that information? They would have been destroyed. What if the king... Well, we know here also the king of Israel had confidence in the man of God. He had confidence in Elisha. He believed what Elisha said. And he gave heed and he followed the direction of Elisha. Now what if Elisha had delivered a message to the king and the king looked at that message and he says, that don't make sense. Now, Elisha's off on this one. I'm going to go do it anyway. Guess what? He'd been killed. And there may have been times when the king of Israel looked at that message and said, oh, it's hard to believe that the Syrians would place their army there. But you know what? I have confidence in Elisha. And I believe his message. I'm going to do it. I'm going to follow. And he saved his life. What if the king of Israel receives these messages from Elisha and he gathers his men together and we're going to critique the message? You know, Elisha didn't spell this word right. And he began to tear down the message. And began to tear down Elisha. All that's doing is planting seed for destruction. And it goes on. Every day. Throughout the world. What if the king of Israel says to his men, we have this message from Elisha, and you know what? He's just out to ruin our fun. That's all he's about, just ruin our fun. He's always being mean to us. In fact, what he says here hurts my feelings. I'm just going to go do it anyway. You lose your life. We better wake up. We better wake up. Go ahead. Tear down the preacher before your children. There'll be a casualty in the war. Go ahead. Tear down the preacher to your grandchildren. You might as well live in Syria and say, little Tommy, go out and play in the bomb field. Go out and play in the minefield today. And then you're shocked when they come home with an arm blown off. Well, I don't understand what happened. Wake up. Wake up. We're in a war zone. And we learn something here from the king of Israel. He listened to the message of God. And he saved his life. He saved his life. Then there's Elisha. Elisha was a man who knew God. God was real to Elisha. Here's a man who lived his life close to God. Here's a man who lived his life in contact with God. Here's a man who lived together with God. Elisha lived his life leaning, depending, feeding upon God. Here's a man who's living his life and he's occupied with God. And you know what the result of all that was? Elisha had perception. Elisha knew what the enemy was going to do. That's not hard to figure. It is not hard to figure out what the enemy is going to do. It's all in here. He hasn't changed his tactics. It's all in here. This is our information. And if you and I stay close to God, you'll hear a voice. You'll hear a voice. You'll hear that small voice within you. It's called the Spirit of God. And he'll say, don't go over there. Don't go in there. And if you have any wisdom at all, you'll listen to that voice. When you stay close to God, you have spiritual perception. Someone who just goes out and runs around in the minefield, they don't have much perception. And yet that's what we do today. We're just going to go have a picnic out in the minefield. Someone's going to get hurt. Someone may get an arm blown off. Something may happen that will affect them the rest of their lives. So don't say, well, we don't want to be too protective. Just what is too protective? When you live in a war zone. Well, I don't want my kids to get mad at me. Quit being so self-centered. Realize that you're not here to be their friend. You're here to protect them. And don't ever criticize a parent for protecting their child. Never criticize them for that. Elisha had spiritual perception. He knew what the enemy was up to. And so do we. Elisha was a man of God who was very much aware and could see and could sense the almighty presence of God. His servant said, alas, master. Elisha comes out and he looks up and sees the same thing the servant saw. But he saw something else also. He saw God. He not only saw God, he sensed the presence of God. He saw and sensed the presence of one greater than all. We need to be like the king of Israel. We need to avail ourselves of the information that we have. Don't run to the enemy for information. And I got news for you. The man of God is not your enemy. Had the king said, you know what, I believe Elisha's our enemy, guess what would have happened? I believe Elisha's the problem. There would have been some deaths. There would have been some casualties. You better properly identify the enemy. It is very obvious to me, just the few times that I glance at Facebook, and I'm about to go off here, but I'm not going to, that people are fighting. They don't know who the enemy is. It's sickening. It is sickening. When God's people fight against themselves and befriend themselves with the devil's crowd. That's sad. But that's what's happening all around us today. We misidentify the enemy. But we need to wake up in the morning and we need to see what Elisha saw. The presence of God. We need to see God working. And that'll give us the motivation. I'm going to press on. I'm going to press on. I'm going to get up and I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to glorify God with my life. I'm going to be holy. I'm going to serve God. I'm going to please God. I'm going to stand for God. I'm not going to hand over my life. I'm not going to hand over my children. I'm not going to hand over my grandchildren to the devil. I'm going to do what's right because I can see God. And He's working. Oh, that we would wake up. And that we would press on in this war. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse song.